Good morning, everybody. A few words of introduction and explanation. The paper is jointly written between myself and Dennis Nicholson, and you may have seen in the programme that I am head of CDLR, the Centre for Digital Library Research, and Dennis is the director. In fact, Dennis retired at the beginning of October, and I've taken over in his place, so that explains the ambiguity in who's actually in charge of the CDLR just now. And that's why Dennis is not here to co-present the paper with me. So I'm going to talk about the HILT project and the resulting architecture and database that was developed, and how the HILT project, I'll explain what the HILT project is in a minute, and how that project was embedded, at least in a pilot sense, in end-user services. And then to talk about potential future development of such terminology services, and finally the role of UDC in these things. The HILT project is the high-level thesaurus. It's funded by the United Kingdom's Joint Information Systems Committee and has lasted nearly 10 years, funded in a series of four phases, each phase being independent of each other, at least in future funding terms. The aim of the project was to investigate issues in trying to find things, particularly on the web, but elsewhere, stuff that's indexed by different subject schemes. The world would be a fine place if we indexed everything according to a single subject scheme, but it ain't like that. The schemes that we investigated were primarily monolingual, that is English, although one or two small experiments were done to include non-English terms. We developed some solutions to problems in finding stuff across different subject schemes. Some of these solutions listed, we use a classification-based switching spine. We've already heard about this approach yesterday. The classification chosen was DDC for the same reasons that have been already expressed. We identified a potential solution as subject indexing of collections and the catalogues that describe those collections, and matching terms between the different subject schemes being used to identify items in those collections. And part of the solution is to develop machine-to-machine terminology services. This is a very crude diagram of the HILT architecture. Behind everything is a database of terminologies or term sets which have been mapped to DDC notations. That database is interrogated using an application programming interface, or API, using a SOAP server, quite similar to the architecture that Kerry's just described. The machine-to-machine access is supplied via an SRU/W server, which acts on the API itself. And finally, client applications can use that machine-to-machine interface in order to build up useful, user-orientated applications which help with searching across different subject schemes. The API does various things. Most of them are listed here. They're fairly obvious because it's a DDC spine system. You need to be able to put a notation in and get collection-level metadata out so that you can identify broad areas to start searching for that particular subject. Another aspect of the API is to be able to put an input a subject term and output mapped DDC notations and captions. That's from term to DDC. The inverse is from DDC notation to mapped terms. Another aspect of the API allows a term and a terminology set to be specified so that terms related to the input term within that terminology set can be output, so matching and related terms are output. And then finally, some bits and pieces that are kind of built into several of the terminologies we use. We're using WordNet to output terms with similar spellings, for example, as a spell checker. And of course, many of the vocabularies have definitions and descriptions of the term, so the terminology will also output definitions for an input term. The terminologies database uses the hub and spoke approach to mapping. We've been hearing about that throughout this seminar. DDC notation acts as the hub or the spine or the switching language. And the terms and non-DDC notations are basically the spoke that's connected to the hub. This approach, as Dagobert said yesterday and other people have mentioned, avoids the problems of direct term-to-term mappings. I think Stella pointed out that if you have three terminologies that you're trying to map together, you end up with six mappings. If you increase that to four, the number goes up to 12, and you get the combinatorial explosion. Attempting to create direct term-to-term mappings for, say, 100 terminology sets is going to result in millions and millions of mappings, and it's completely unsustainable. One of the reasons for choosing a classification scheme as the hub rather than a terminology set itself is that the notations in classification schemes are usually language independent. And there is, again, we've been hearing throughout the seminar, there's accommodation within classification schemes for new terms, and they're maintained on that basis. However, there's a downside to the hub and spoke approach. And again, this has already been pointed out. A direct term-to-term mapping can be semantically checked. It is created by a human, after all. But if you go through the hub, there is no guarantee that one term-to-term, the term-to-hub mapping, and then the hub back out to term mapping, there's no guarantee that that will maintain perfect semantic alignment. And there is a danger of semantic drift in the hub-and-spoke approach. And as the number of linkages increases, and I'll come back to this later, as the number increases, the possibilities of semantic drift actually become quite severe. And we need to develop ways of monitoring and, in fact, providing some kind of feedback loop to keep things semantically aligned. The very last part of the HILT project was to embed that terminology services architecture into some real live end-user services. It was an extension to the final phase, and three operational services were chosen to test the utility of this kind of approach. The first service is called the Depot, and it's an institutional repository where the assumption is that the depositor or the user actually generates the metadata for what they've added to the data bank. And in particular, HILT was used to help users choose the correct terms for subject metadata. We've heard a lot about Intuit already. Intuit's used quite often to test these services. And as you now know, it's a multi-scheme. It uses different classification and subject indexing schemes. And it's a digital library, so it was quite a good test bed for the problems in multi-scheme searching. And finally, the other one that was chosen was Scoon, which was briefly mentioned yesterday. It's a collections level metadata set, which describes collections in archives, libraries, and museums in Scotland. The API functions that I mentioned earlier are all fairly primitive, and they're intended to be combined by services into larger building blocks which actually do something useful. So for the embedding pilot phase of HILT, these API functions were combined into higher level applications which themselves can be built on. And in fact, this approach very much, I think, lies behind what Dan was saying this morning, that if you put stuff into the web, people will start building things out of it, and then you can iterate and then build stuff on the stuff that's been built. One of these applications, for example, is spell checking. This has been mentioned already. It's quite important that you're able to disambiguate a user input term. Users often don't know that what they're saying or looking for is ambiguous. And finally, a fairly obvious one is to map uncontrolled user input to controlled terminologies, which can then be applied to searching, or indeed indexing. And suggesting related terms. Again, we've seen an example of that in the previous presentation, where being able to get the related terms actually helps improve the recall of a search. very quick travel through the Schoon application. If you can't read it at the back, this is a subject search term, has been entered by a user. The term is teeth. And when the user submits that term, the API returns the Dewey hierarchies containing that term. This is a disambiguation device because you will see that there are two distinct hierarchies here. One is goes to the technology branch, the other one goes to the natural sciences branch, where of course teeth figure in both. You'll also notice, those at the back might not be able to see, that the bottom two entries here don't actually contain the text string T-E-E-T-H. What's happened here is that teeth has been mapped within the terminology service from a different vocabulary into this DDC spine, so it's displaying those as well. This is a pilot. This would not normally be exposed like this to end users. There's too much detail here. What the end user really needs to see is the difference in the semantics of their input term and to make a choice as to which semantic they're actually referring to. Is it technology, medicine and health, or is it biology, human biology or animal biology? Whatever, the user clicks on the hyperlink term. The system then goes off and uses the DDC number attached to that term, and it successively truncates that number, thus broadening the search. DDC has a huge advantage over UDC in this respect in that the notation entirely encapsulates the hierarchy. And because it's decimal, by successively removing the last digit, you actually broaden the search and increase the recall. You broaden the semantic of the term that's been input. Schoon is a collections level description service, so there aren't that many collections recorded in Schoon that are just about teeth. I'm sure there are collections of teeth around, but we haven't come across them to record them. So what's happened here is that the Dewey number for teeth in medicine, whatever it is, has been successively truncated until it finds collections that have been indexed by that Dewey number. And as you see, these are health medical library collections, but they're also coming from archives and museums. I think that's the important thing for this. So that's just an example of how you can use a terminology service to disambiguate the user's input term and to provide the user with a more directed search environment. Okay, big problem. Even with the efficiencies of a hub-and-spoke approach, we don't think actually it's sustainable. There are thousands and thousands of different subject vocabularies that have to be mapped on a global basis here, containing thousands and thousands of terms. So the scalability of these approaches remains a significant factor. What hasn't been mentioned in this seminar at all yet, from what I can remember, is that we can use machines and mathematics to help with this. We can associate in existing metadata different terminologies. And in fact, the mapping from DDC to LCSH that's been mentioned was initially created purely by machine, using the critical mass of instance records in WorldCat. When you have hundreds and hundreds of metadata records about the same object coming from different sources, and one of those libraries uses UDC, another library uses DDC, another library uses LCSH, because you have so many records, you can use statistical mapping to come up with fairly reliable linkages between, in this instance, DDC and LCSH. I think that's probably the only way forward. User-generated metadata is also extremely important, as Dan has mentioned. And then we have to look at the impact of the semantic web and linked data. And this is now about to segue into Dan's presentation. LCSH and RAMO, the French equivalent, are already available as linked data in SCoS format on the web and can be freely used. In fact, there is also mappings between LCSH and RAMO available as linked data. Those mappings came out of the MACS project, which was a term-to-term mapping project. The DDC top three levels, classes 000 to 999, were recently made available as open linked data as well. And the DDC is certainly developing a representation in SCOS of the entire DDC scheme, not just the captions, the relative index, but also the scope notes, the including notes, things like centered headings and all sorts of structural artifacts, as well as version control, which is extremely important. Whether the DDC releases this into the public domain or not is probably the theme of this conference, but you put UDC in instead of DDC. We've heard all sorts of stuff about business models, but quite frankly, unless these large organizations listen to what people like Dan are saying, then the world is going to ignore us, flow around it and find different ways of doing stuff, and all of our professional expertise will be lost. It will become irrelevant. If you look at the Library of Congress linked data service, terminology service, you'll find actually it doesn't call itself LCSH, but Library of Congress Authorities, and there's a good reason for that, because they're intending to put the name authority file up as well as linked data, and of course names can be subjects. And the virtual international authority file may go the same way. Finally, IFLA is involved in a major initiative to try and get the formats that lie behind metadata records, such as ISBD, and related to that RDA, which is a content standard that's being developed, all of those formats are now being looked at with a view to getting them into the semantic web. Once that's done, the instance data, the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of MARC records that exist, with classification data in them, will be available for parsing into the semantic web soup, into these RDF triples. And that's the kind of sequencing that has to occur. We can therefore move from the Hilt architecture to a distributed architecture using Sparkle. Last slide. What is the role of UDC in all of this? Well, for a switching language, we need a machine-readable version. We need a scheme that covers all subject areas. The scheme needs to be in widespread use. It needs to have been translated into different languages. And it needs to have mappings to other schemes in existence to act as a starter. So far, so good with UDC. However, we also need the RDF linked data representation. Does UDC have plans to do this? The stuff needs to be openly available, as Dan has powerfully said. Does UDC have plans to do this? And finally, I think we can answer yes to this, is there a critical mass of catalogue records using UDC and other subject schemes that will provide the automatic mappings which are absolutely essential for any of this to work? And that's me. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Let me start with one question. What is the, is there some kind of evaluation of the quality of mappings that goes through DDC? Because I think DDC may be not the ideal candidate for a hub, but what did you find on the quality of mappings from term to term?
In DDC, the part of the reason we use DDC is it came with a set of mappings already, the mappings to LCSH and to the internal captions and relative index of DDC. As I said, the LCSH mapping initially started as a statistical mapping. Those of you, probably not very many of you, who know DDC and use it, we'll know that in the WebDewey product, these mappings exist, and they're classified into three different types, corresponding to three different qualities. There's the statistical mapping, which is, you know, buyer beware, because a machine did this. There is an editorial mapping, where a human has gone in and said, yes, the machine was correct, and is therefore as good as you can get. And there's something in between, which is a mapping that's been cross-checked against other sources of data. So that's a very crude measurement of three different types of quality. All of the other mappings in Hilt were done manually, and there's a scaling issue with that, as I said.
The back question is not how good is the mapping from Dewey to something else to Dewey. Mm-hmm. The question is if you go from A to Dewey to B, mm-hmm. how good is the mapping from A to B?
That really depends on the circumstance, depends on these other factors.
Yes.
At the expense of prolonging the misery, I'm not sure I understood what you were saying about the decimal quality of Dewey and UDC. For example, if you have a block 094215, the semantics of that is already immediately clear to anybody, a human being, not a machine, a human being who understands 094215. And it's also immediately understood by anybody who understands this bundle at all that 42 and 41 are really challenged historically concepts because of the way in which time and space have been navigated politically in that 942 space. Now, if you drop the 5 off, it's pretty simple and straightforward. If you drop the 1 off, it's simple and straightforward. If you drop the 2 off, you've got into a mess. If you drop the 4 off, you've hit a catastrophe. If you drop the 9 off, the thing has become completely meaningless. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm curious to know how you respond to that.
The notation is not being used here in a truly semantic way. It's a pattern matching. So the collections themselves are classified by DDC, and they will not contain spurious, half-complete, rubbish DDC notations. The user input term is classified by DDC on the same principles. And of course, as you truncate the user input DDC, to broaden the search to find a collection that might contain something of interest in that subject area, you are going to, in an intermediary way, generate spurious, completely wrong, false numbers. But it doesn't matter because you're joining two proper points together. How you get there is neither here nor there. And this is, because it's decimal, chop a number until you start getting hits in the collections. That's the beauty of it. That you can do this in UDC, but it requires a little bit more programming than just straightforward string manipulation.
It's exactly the same.
But either thing, the same principle applies in UDC, and in neither does the notation actually completely specify the hierarchy as written by a set of headings. There's a question over here.
I would just observe that it's the same with any Klingon, for all we know.
Yes, provided the notation is hierarchically expressive, but faceted classification is not hierarchical. Yeah, but within the facet. But if you have a constructed number, then you would have to parse each facet.
I think I'll cut off this discussion and entertain one more question on the web services aspect of making teams available through web services. Dan.
Do you have any software that's free to share?
We've got the pilots running, but Hilt's funding has ceased. So, you know, in some senses, we've got an issue about keeping everything running. We have got funding to use Hilt in a couple of small applications. And we're going to take the opportunity to start moving the architecture away from this database-orientated thing, much more into web RDF stuff. Fortunately, because the linked data stuff is now beginning to appear, we're in a position to at least test this approach. And certainly, if we do that, anything that we do, we will put back into the web for obvious reasons.
Software as well as data?
Yeah.
I would just make one last comment. There are obviously similarities between what Glamorgan does and what Strathclyde does. And so can we somehow get the best of the two together?
But these aren't the only two initiatives, but we are talking to one another. We do talk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.